Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and welcome to our Monday edition. As we were listening to the bumper music, I said to the crew, "Are you all ready for Radio Magic?" And there wasn't a sound. Nobody. Nobody said,
"Yes,
yeah, let's
Joe,
go
we're
team."
Ready.
Well, we are.
Maybe I was watching all of the championship playoff games, you know, where you have all the huddle and everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and I was waiting for that, but we didn't get that.
We don't do that a lot in radio.
No. What, Radio Magic?
No.
Well,
huddling.
There's that and the huddling thing.
Huddling. Yeah. It's only good on TV.
That's true.
We need the visual.
Well, good morning. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and we're going to do just that. We always invite you to help us out. Roundtable at WAMC.org. There's lots of ways you can get a hold of us. You can do the email, which is roundtable at WAMC.org, Facebook, our webpage, tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Lots of ways you can get a hold of us, and we'd love to hear from you. This morning, we'd like to start off with the story which Ray mentioned during the context of his newscast, which we'll be hearing more about as the week progresses, and that is the marijuana laws in New York State apparently will be loosened up a bit. We have our hearing word from the administration, from the Cuomo administration, that as part of the State of the State address that the governor will deliver on Wednesday, that there will be, New York will join a growing group of states that will loosen restrictions on marijuana, and the governor will announce an executive action that would allow limited use of the drug by those with serious illnesses. And this is different than taking it legislatively, Alan. This is an executive action.
That's right. There is a previous law that allows it.
Is there? Yeah. I was wondering how we could do this.
No, there was a previous law. You remember that way back in the day, David Axelrod tried to prohibit. He was the health commissioner.
Yes. Right.
The best health commissioner we've ever had.
The best, absolutely,
we've ever had
in the entire country.
He was a saint. And he tried. He had the guts to try to do it, and the courts beat him down and said, no, that's a legislative function. Now, in the legislature, Dick Gottfried has a more permissive bill, let's put it that way, for medical marijuana. Look, this governor doesn't want to be tagged as Jerry Brown once was, as sort of Mayor Moonbeam.
Yeah.
So what he does is he gets on the sort of liberal on marijuana thing. After all, he has a lot of constituents in the Democratic Party who want to see this happen. And frankly, there is no good reason in the world that somebody who is dying of terminal cancer or has some major disease or glaucoma shouldn't be allowed to do it. But he's made a lot of provisions, and one of them is you got to go to one of these 20 hospitals that they've named around New York State, and you've got to ask permission. And most people don't want to walk into hospitals and start with that and start proving that they have terminal illnesses. Yeah,
disease.
And
disease.
It is.
Thanks, Lou.
Like Colorado or California, where if you go in and you say I have stress or I have a backache, a doctor of many different backgrounds can prescribe the drug. It would be very restricted in New York to such things as cancer and glaucoma, and basically for pain relief, from what I understand.
Sure.
So very restricted. But again, it certainly does open the door, doesn't it?
Well, without question. Look. When you're dealing with Andrew Cuomo, you always have to see the political aspect to this. He's got a constituency. It's called the Democratic Party. He's got Bill de Blasio sitting down there in New York. And by the way, I sure called this one, which was just a little aside, which was that Bill de Blasio's signature program is pre-K for everybody, in which he is absolutely right. We know it. We know that when you give a kid pre-K, things happen people do better, they stay out of jail, all of those things. So I said in the beginning, I know Andrew Cuomo well enough to know that what he's going to do is satisfy de Blasio. And he said, okay, so what we're going to do is they're leaking like crazy. But I said it last week. I said it the week before that they were going to come out with a pre-K program of their own, which they are. De Blasio, interestingly, comes back, apparently, if I'm reading the papers correctly this morning, and says, no, not enough. In other words, you got to tax. Andrew Cuomo, of course, is anti-tax, wants to lower people's taxes. de Blasio wants to, in New York City, tax everybody who makes more than $500,000. And he says, no, it's not good enough just to give us this pre-K. We want people taxed also. So Cuomo, back to the original medical marijuana issue, is always looking over his shoulder to know that there is this other thing going on, this sort of progressive revolution. And marijuana is one plank in it. Pre-K is another plank in it. And so he's got to defend his anti-tax thing. Now, if he does pre-K around the state, then the next question is going to be, who's going to pay for it? And is it going to cost you $25 to cross the George Washington, George Washington Bridge?
No, the new Tappan Zee. It'll be the new Tappan Zee Bridge.
No, it's not the Tappan Zee. It will be the Andrew Cuomo Bridge.
Is it? That's what they're going to call it?
No. Predict it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. It'll be done after he's gone, so, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So they could call it the Andrew Cuomo Bridge.
I don't like this naming stuff while people are alive, but then they did it with Koch. They did it with, they've done it before.
And it's a little strange, but
down in the legislature here, if you ever see the Justice Building, is the Robert Abrams
Building.
That's
right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Which we all wish he was back, but that's besides the point.
The medical marijuana bills have passed in the state assembly 4 times, most recently this past year. Only to stall in the Senate, where a group of breakaway Democrats share leadership with Republicans who have traditionally been lukewarm on the issue. So it was up to the governor to bypass the legislature altogether.
Well, yeah, no, I think the assembly will always vote for marijuana on any basis, whether it's, you know, happy times or whatever.
There's that kind of crowd.
You know, it's kind of stupid. I mean, the whole thing to me, and I've said this before, is really sort of stupid. If we can legally consume alcohol, which leads to 88,000 deaths a year in this country, why not legalize marijuana? Nobody dies from smoking marijuana
alcohol. You know, Lib, there are answers to that. One of the problems, of course, is we had those two state troopers here the other day when we were doing the get rid of alcohol on the roads. And they were quite clear that, you know, if you wait a couple of hours after you have one drink, you're in the clear. Not necessarily so with marijuana.
Stays in the system longer.
And number two, there's no way of telling. There's no test for it.
I'm sure they'll find one.
Well, yeah, they will. And the other thing is, can you walk this straight line?
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Right. I just think, you know, I think that what he's doing, de Blasio is going to keep pushing him further to the center left, just because that's what's the dynamic that's going to happen.
He's the new boy in town. There's no question.
That's right. And people are really, all the progressives around and all the progressive Democrats around the country are looking to see what he does and what he's going to be able to do to push other politicians further to the center and then over to the left a little bit. but I think that this is good. I think however he's doing it, by executive order or executive action or whatever it is, to be able to provide medical marijuana for people will alleviate a lot of suffering.
I want to go back, Libby, if I can, to something that Joe pointed out about the legislature. Now, we already know that the assembly will vote for pot under almost any condition.
Right. This particular assembly.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know what? Yeah. It's a veto-proof assembly. And
right, yeah.
Okay. Nevertheless, they are in I want to talk about the Senate for a minute. Remember, I think everybody out there should remember that there are now more Democrats in the Senate than there are Republicans. Okay, we're all agreed on that, right?
Duh. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the only reason that Skelos, the Republican leader, is in power, as Joe has said,
because of Jeff Klein,
is Jeff Klein and his four Democrats who've gone over to the other side. Now, I always say Jeff. Yeah, that is so wrong. Right? It's Klein.
Is it?
Did you? Okay. So no, but you made a thing with your face. What were you?
She's on the dark side.
Oh,
as in the dark side.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Or the other side. Well, you said that. So now, not me. So so now there are these four guys, people.
You following all this, Ray?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every dot.
People who are sitting up there, they're going to vote against medical marijuana or marijuana. You know, the people in the Bronx are going to be delighted with that. So what can I say?
Yeah, I think Jeff is going to, I think the IDC will play a pivotal role in this. That's what I've been reading some of the other pundits are thinking that he will show his liberal cred and get this done in the Senate. Yeah.
The thing I found interesting, and then we'll go to a break, but the thing I found interesting in the New York Times article about this issue of the governor and marijuana is the kind of sibling rivalry between Cuomo and Governor Christie. By basically saying, well, look, you know, you could say here is this Republican governor in New Jersey with presidential aspirations. Well, that state already has medical marijuana. And, you know, that state has already moved forward on many of these other issues. And the quote in the article says that for Mr. Cuomo, who has often found common ground with Republicans on fiscal issues, the sudden shift in marijuana, which he is expected to announce in the State of the State address, was the latest of several instances in which he has embarked on a major social policy effort to bolster his popularity with a large portion of his political base.
That's pretty much what I was trying to say.
Right. But there seems to be, it's almost kind of keeping up with the Joneses. And the Joneses meaning the Christies.
I would say New Jersey.
Yeah, with New Jersey.
We're not going to hit on New
Jersey. But also, let's, you know.
Yeah, but this happened under Corzine. And then Christie, you know. He modified it and put the restrictions
on it. And put his stamp on it.
Well, what's more dangerous, imbibing marijuana or driving down the New Jersey Turnpike past those chemical plants?
Okay, but my point
I agree. What's more dangerous, Alan, is smoking a joint while you're driving past those chemical
plants. That's called compounding.
Yes, that's compounding the problem.
But my point being, you have two politicians on different sides of the aisle who are both supposedly have an eye on the White House.
Yeah, no, I got your point. Yeah. Well, Christie has a nomination which many people think is his for the asking or working, whereas Cuomo won't, unless he knows something about Hillary that we don't know, is sort of out of it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation on this and other issues. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after the short break.
Support comes from H. Houston Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint, and tool and equipment rentals. True Value. Start right, start here. HHouse.com. And Larry's Southwestern Sauces, locally produced Mexican cooking sauces by cookbook author Larry Somke, available in New York, New England, and online. LarrySouthwesternSauces.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. It's roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear what you have to think about the issues that we're talking about, including marijuana and the entire state of New Jersey. Now, In one breath. Whatever you have to say. All right. The U.S. Secretary of State has said that the U.S. will help Iraq fight al-Qaeda-linked militants, but that it is not planning to send troops back to the country. John Kerry said he was confident the government of in Iraq could defeat the militants. And so this, I guess, is somewhat what we expected, somewhat of a no-brainer. But by the same, because I don't think we ever expected this administration at any time to say we should send troops back to Iraq.
Nor do we expect that that these folks over there are capable of defending their own interests. That's the tough one. And so the first time we see women being beaten in the streets and put it on national television, somebody's going to say, well, somebody should do something about that. And then somebody will say, well, that's us, and we should put boots on the ground, and we should do this. That's how the trap begins. But in fact, if you stay out, I think that the chances are that they will do more than if you come in and do it for them. So I guess that's my bottom line.
I think this is going to be this is going to be the opposite of Vietnam. In Vietnam, we first put in advisors, then we put troops, and then we were in a war. Yeah. In Iraq, we started with a war. We've gotten our troops out. I think we'll see more advisors.
Well, advisors are often the boots.
Right, and the CIA folks. Yes,
and
they are, but
they
not
hire,
in this.
You know, right, in the various security
that's right,
firms the, they
that's
hire.
That's right.
For
I think you'll see a lot of that, too. But
to
I don't
what
think,
end is the question?
Well, to what end is up in the air. I mean, to what end is hopefully is to...
We want to put the bad guys back in power one way or the other,
well,
no matter which side we choose.
No, Alan, I'm not saying
running.
That. Yeah, right, yeah. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I think we want Iraq to be as stable as possible, but politically, getting back in there with boots on the ground in a Army, Navy,
sure,
Marine kind of thing, it will go nowhere. And I don't think the Republicans will say yes to it. I know the Democrats aren't going to say yes to it. The people aren't going to say yes to it. So I think we'll see CIA, we'll see advisors, we'll see Halliburton, we'll see other types. But we won't officially be there.
And the American people should know what's really happening. And I want to get back to, you know, Snowden and all the others who are pointing out that, hey, you know, it never is what it seems to be. And as I've
never
said a gazillion times, you can't have democracy unless you have information.
So the Iraqi government said it had lost control of the key city of Fallujah, west of Baghdad. Al-Qaeda-linked militants now controlled the south of the city, according to a security source speaking to the BBC. Iraqi officials say they had lost control to the militant group. And an Iraqi reporter there says the tribesmen allied with al-Qaeda hold the rest of the city. Separately, on Sunday, bombs in the capital city of Baghdad left at least 19 people dead. The deadliest attack, which police and medical sources told Reuters had killed 9 and wounded 25, was in the Shia district of Shab, which is not far from Baghdad. But the question being... So how much do you let them just work it out, and how much do you have those advisors, as you said, start to get involved, and what is the end game?
There are pediatricians who believe that when, after a while, the children cry at night, that there comes that point when the child should be allowed to cry, and that you don't have to go in there every single time. And the child will work it out. You know, I don't want to make the absolute comparison here, but I do think if we stay out, you know, it'll, with the understanding that there could be consequences that we don't like.
Well, there have been 10,000 of them in the last year, or close to it. 7,800 of civilians, 1,000
sure,
members of the security forces have been killed in 2013.
But why us, Ray? That's the question. In other words, we have a United Nations. We have Arab groups who are capable, as in Africa, for dealing with these things. That seems to be the way to go, rather than the United States unilaterally or pretending to be in concert with a whole bunch of other people. I think that's the way we have to do it. At least that's if I'm sitting there and I'm Obama and I'm sitting in the White House, that's what I'm going to be thinking.
And the rest of the world looks and says, okay, but you started this.
Well, there's always that. I mean, you can always do that. And the answer to that is yes, that may have been it, but we're not going back to prehistoric times.
Right.
This is, as Alphonse D'Amato once said, that was then and this is now.
You know, and the you started it. I mean, the whole Middle East is about you started it.
Right.
You threw
absolutely.
The first stone.
Right.
So
sure. Yeah.
It's, you know, you have to deal with the reality of the situation. And the reality is that we can be the world's policeman. We have been the world's policeman. Whether that's the right role for us here, whether there's going to be political will, which I doubt. I think that, you know, we need to look to the United Nations, and we need to look to other Western democracies to step up. And I don't know if they will, but we can't be the
and
only one.
And even if they do, you know, who's pushing whose buttons? I mean, you know, it's become sort of obvious to many of us that this is often, you know, a pre-planned sham. And we know,
yes.
You know, we know what we know what's happening. But my big question is, whose side should we be on? We should be on the Shia side. Should we be on the? You know, I mean, I don't get what when we jump in without examining the potential consequences that we built an Osama bin Laden. We did. We made mm-hmm. that, and because we weren't looking where we were going. And I guarantee you that if we do it again, we're going to have the same thing. Look, we have the leaders of both Afghanistan and certainly Iraq spitting in our face now. They're not saying thank you for what you did.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on Facebook or Twitter or the website. But the email address is roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion for our first hour. And we welcome you. Alan Chartok is here. Was that a yawn?
Or no, just a sigh of resignation.
No, that was.
Where are you resigning from?
Well, see how the next 26 minutes go.
Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here at Libby Post, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about the tale of Dick Metcalf. He is one of the country's preeminent gun journalists. He had a column in a magazine entitled Guns and Ammo, a well-known magazine that is widely available.
And he had the back page column.
That's right, and was a... Was in the gun community
a guru.
Very well thought out columnist, and he has gone missing, journalistically speaking. His columns are nowhere to be found. Apparently, in late October, Mr. Metcalf wrote a column that the magazine titled "Let's Talk Limits," which debated gun laws. The fact is, wrote Mr. Metcalf, who taught history at Cornell and Yale, all constitutional rights are regulated, always have been, and need to be. Well, the backlash was swift and fierce. Readers threatened to cancel their subscriptions. Death threats poured in by email. His television program was canceled, pulled from the air. Just days after the column appeared, Mr. Metcalf said his editor called to tell him that two major gun manufacturers had said in no uncertain terms that they could no longer do business with the publisher of Guns and Ammo and the co-producers of his TV show. If he continued to work there, he was let go immediately. He says, I've been vanished, disappeared. He's 67 years old and said in an interview that outside of St. Louis, where he has a gun range, said that now you see him, now you don't. He is unsure of his next move, but fears he's become a pariah in the gun industry, to which he said he has devoted nearly his entire adult life.
Hey, Ray, I noticed you just had your head in your hands and you were...
Yeah, well, the fact that he said, I've been vanished, disappeared. Really? When did that fall into the language? That drives me insane.
Oh, so you have a language problem.
I've been vanished. I have vanished. How about that?
Well,
I've been vanished.
Well, it does show you. It does show you how incredibly salient anybody who has anything to say on the other side in the mm-hmm. gun issue, you know, is going to be treated.
Any rational thought
so,
about
guns. Let me just take this out of this. So if a columnist for Prevention magazine started writing about how Twinkies were great for you, would they let go of that journalist for basically the same reason?
Well, wait a second now, Joe. If a columnist for Prevention magazine said Twinkies were good for you, that would be a lie. That would be a lie. If an eminent Cornell scholar comes along and says, my view is all constitutional rights have in some way been regulated by the government, That is a position that is not parallel to your Twinkie comment.
I was using it as an exaggeration, but given in the health community, there are certainly great questions,
sure.
And great debate over,
sure.
over multivitamins, over supplements. So if you
sure.
so if you are Prevention Magazine, and I'm just using them, but say your advertising base is largely comes from pharmaceutical and medical supplement industries, and then you suddenly say that it's all a crock, do you get rid of the person?
Well, it's about the integrity of journalism and whether there's any integrity left.
Yeah, other than the New York Post?
At WAMC.
With all due respect, okay? It's about selling advertising. This is
but there's supposed to be a curtain. When I was a student, and Fred LeBrun was my teacher in the journalism program at SUNY Albany, and I took classes with Alan, hey. It was about a curtain between the editorial and the publishing part.
This is a guns. This is guns and ammo.
Okay, it's totally shred.
If I went
it
on
no longer exists.
WAMC, if I had a magazine and said, "Boy, public radio is terrible. It's populated with left wing nuts," I would be gone. I would be gone in a second.
You just said it.
But if I was writing in a magazine, so if this guy writes in gun, who is right? I would wonder, Alan, if you would consider him an eminent Cornell scholar in 30 years, where he said guns are great. Let's all get guns.
I would refer you to Mr. Herbert London and his regular commentary here on WAMC.
Mm-hmm.
We not only, and there are a lot of people who have letters from me in which they say, get him off of there. I don't want him there. I'll never give you another dime if that guy has his 3 minutes a week there.
Yeah,
and yet we treasure that kind.
But you missed my point. My point is this is a Duck Dynasty situation. In other words, Duck
right.
Dynasty,
it's
that guy,
Duck Dynasty.
He had a right to say what he said. The producers had a right to say, you are an idiot. You have just alienated so many of our viewers. You're gone from the show. The GLAD and all and everyone else had a right to say, we're going to boycott those advertisers.
Except in this Guns and Ammo published this article. To their credit, initially published the article, which I think is, well, that's there's that.
But
the
point is, they're trying to sell advertising.
Right.
So then
they get a little bit of pressure, and then they turn around and say, never mind.
It is a business.
But this is the difference between trying to sell advertising and being a trade journal. It's like the publications we get at home. Lynn's an interior designer. We get Electronics Home. We get this. We get that. We get all these things. And it's all driven by the vendors. And that's what this is. These publications now are all driven by the vendors. You can't think that you're going to read them and see anything objective other than what the advertisers want the publication to say.
But you're not going
to
read that.
Because that's what he said in here.
A lot of people read it, Ray.
No, what I'm saying is nobody in this room reads it.
No,
gun owners and gun lovers read that.
I don't think people should have guns. So, no, I'm not going
to
read this.
But that's the point. The people who like guns and who...
Yeah, but they like guns to the point of no sense of responsibility for what happens when you give people guns.
Different argument.
No, it's not.
It's not missing the point.
Different argument.
Missing the point.
I think we're missing the point.
No,
I think the point of this is that you have a guy who is a constitutional scholar, who is a journalist, who has written on gun issues, and who is now gone missing. His voice could not be heard.
He's been vanished.
Oh, he's okay. Whatever. But the fact of the matter is, they got rid of him.
Meaning, the gun lobby, and is so strong that this guy who says one word can just pretty much go puff.
And they call us so intolerant. The progressive left, so intolerant of anything that isn't within their narrow purview. When we talk about Duck Dynasty, Sarah Palin gets up and calls us intolerant because we are pointing out how hateful what he has said
is. And you have
is.
That right.
Right.
And he has that right to say it.
Yeah,
but then he gets
fired. But then he gets fired for saying it.
It's a gun magazine. Again, if it was Ham Radio magazine,
you know,
and Ray is a ham radio operator, and he says, boy, ham radio is the dumbest. Why would you sit in a basement with electronics? Man, you've wasted your life. I wouldn't be writing editorials for the Ham Radio magazine.
Let's remember that Wayne LaPierre in the 80s testified before Congress to say people don't need AK-47s.
Yeah.
He's from the NRA, the VP.
Yeah.
people don't need AK-47s.
Right.
And now, because the NRA has shifted from being the voice of actual people who like shooting guns and gun owners to the shill of the gun manufacturers, they're not going to, he's not going to say that. He's going to say every single time people should have unfettered access to every gun that they want. And all this guy was saying is, it's a constitutional issue, and maybe we should look at it. And he gets fired for saying that.
And also that we can't even have that discussion.
Right.
That it's so off the table that that discussion is just...
Oh, we'll have the discussion. He'll find a job. MSNBC or somebody will hire him. He will do quite well. He will not be at Guns and Ammo, perhaps.
He hasn't gotten a job yet.
I know. Well, he's been disappeared. I mean, he's been vanished. But, I mean, someone will find...
I vanished him.
That's ridiculous.
No, he's been banished, but his byline
vanished. Been banished
his,
is fine.
Right, but his byline vanished. I think that was the point. His byline disappeared.
The point is they have the right to do it. It's a gun magazine read by gun owners and...
Oh, no. I don't have any doubt that they have the right to do it.
Yeah, so...
I just think that it just shows the intolerance of mm-hmm. the... And Libby, going back to your earlier remark about Professor LeBrun, who I very much admire... there was always this mythology of journalism, which is that, that the advertising comes second, that there's an inviolable law between the advertising and the thing. I don't know that that ever really existed.
It's one of those things I like to hold on to.
Sure. I agree.
As we hold on to that for a moment... We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll discuss other issues that we have to discuss. We welcome
like what?
Your comment. Oh, just wait.
Things that we like
just
to discuss.
Wait. Things that we're allowed to discuss. Roundtable, WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the shops at Crawford Square, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, featuring the Yoga Depot, offering yoga classes daily. Yoga Depot on Facebook. And Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is, I'm very happy you're here. We have a great panel. Libby Post is here, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk about the Pope for a moment and this story, which has been written about over the last several days. Pope Francis has taken another step toward making the Catholic Church more inclusive by telling priests to rethink how they reach out to children of gay and separated parents. But the Vatican warned Sunday against reading too much into the remarks. How can we proclaim Christ to a generation that is changing? We must be careful not to administer a vaccine against faith to them, Pope Francis told around 120 leaders of male religious orders during a meeting at the Vatican. The actual remarks were made in November, but were reported Friday by an Italian Jesuit magazine. The Pope said the percentage of children studying in schools who have separated parents is very high. The situation in which we live now provides us with new challenges, which sometimes are difficult to understand. The Pope received praise from gay rights groups in July when he said, if someone is gay and seeks the Lord with goodwill, who am I to judge?
Well, let me just say one thing.
Yes.
I'm Jewish. Libby's Jewish. I can only say that while he is the leader of Catholics in the world, he's terribly important to everybody because he sets the standards for tolerance for what's happening, so that he really is a world leader. And you can see that the media and everybody else are picking up on this for a good reason. They understand exactly how important it is every time this guy makes a change in direction.
Well, and here is a guy who Time, not that this really means anything, but Time magazine made him their man of the year, person of the year, because of the influence that he has. And I think that when you look, Libby, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, we've talked many times in the show about, you know, those walls breaking down, and I have to say I'm as a Catholic and as someone who is you know I have been pleasantly surprised / shocked over the last year of how I mean you just don't expect these things mm-hmm. to be said from the Vatican.
No, and, you know, it wasn't just Time that made him the person of the year. So did The Advocate, which is the leading national lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender news publication that comes out every month, and TheAdvocate.com, which is a daily. So people are looking to him. I mean, you know, there are lots of gay Catholics, lots. And they a long, long, long time ago, a group called Dignity started, and they were laughed out of the churches, you know. But there are lots of gay Catholics who don't want to give up their religion just because of the politics of the church. And they've worked very, very hard. And what Pope Francis is doing is saying, it's okay for you to walk in these doors. It's okay for you to pray to God with us. And it's okay for you to be who you are as a Catholic because we love you. And who am I to judge? And, you know, it's a much different tone than we got from Pope Benedict and from John Paul II. And Benedict, you know, you can see his footprints all through John Paul II's papacy because he was the head of the Office of the Propagation of the Faith, and he wrote some of those really horrible, horrible encyclicals. So it's important for the gay community, it's important for the Jewish community to have a pope who is saying, let's bring everybody to the table, let's value everyone, regardless of who they are, who they love, who they worship. And that's a new thing. And it's a breath of fresh air. We haven't heard anything like that since Vatican II when we were kids.
Right.
Now, what did it seems, based on this article in the LA Times, it was fairly nebulous. What did he actually say this time? In other words, we know what he said in July.
Right. What he said was, you know, we have to recognize that children have different kinds of parents. It's not just mom and dad anymore. It's not June and Ward anymore. You know, this one little thing, I sort of thought of it as a sort of a backhanded way of getting into the gay community, but my mother's girlfriend doesn't like me, and that's why this little girl was upset. And
that's what he said.
You know, what he says is not that it's bad that the mom has a girlfriend, but what the issue here is that the church needs to deal with these children equitably and with compassion and without judgment about who their parents are.
I see.
Now, meanwhile, the Vatican indicated that Francis's comments were more about reaching out to a changing society than giving it a stamp of approval. But it seems as though, this is just my thought, and I'm reading into this, but it seems like the church is sort of catching up to him.
Yes.
You know, like he's running with the ball, and they're just trying to catch up.
Yes.
Well, you don't really think that they would issue that kind of a clarification if he didn't know about it, do you?
No, but I think he seems to be a very smart man and understands that, you know, it's going to take some time.
He's going to have some balance here.
And there's going to have to be some changes.
Right.
And
he's the Bill de Blasio of.
Well, let's sort of remember how Protestantism got started. People protested.
Right.
You know, they didn't like what had happened in the church. And if you go to Latin America, where he's from.
That's right. Liberation theology.
It's unbelievable what's happened to Catholicism. It has a real challenge there.
And when you want to be mad at him, if you feel like you want to be mad at him, read about how he feels about women in the church. And then you can be mad at him again. You know, so if you are of that, feel that way.
There's no, you know, he's not perfect, and he can only change so much in one fell swoop.
And I'm, by the way, Joe, I'm not so sure about that. In other words, you're right. Are women going to be priests
right
now? But you watch, this fellow is going to find all kinds of important roles he already has for women in the church in terms of the offices in the Vatican and the rest. He's really going to make changes.
He's forward thinking. He's a visionary, and he sees what's the future of the church if they don't change.
And when you see these things, it's fascinating to me that because we I think many Catholics thought that it would take someone younger to bring about this kind of change, that it would bring out and someone either from Latin America or from the States that would have a more progressive view. What's interesting is that now you look at it and say, wow, how did he get elected? You know, this is great. I mean, like,
well,
how did,
it
that,
is
that's
a great,
great
question, and yes. It's one that yes. has ruminated in my mind for a while.
Didn't
Joe,
they know?
Yeah, like
no, they knew. I think the church was in real trouble. I think it was in trouble over the...
Yeah, they were in trouble before, and then they did Benedict, and you were like, oh, my God, there's
And they
no...
got in more trouble. And
yeah,
right. And he's, you know, covered a lot of things up. They probably did realize it. I mean, you know, you watch Cardinal Dolan, the guy in New
sure.
York,
yeah.
right?
Boy, did...
Watch him spin.
Oh, no, there's been quite a change.
Yeah, I mean, he spins constantly because he has no choice. He can't be out there against what the Pope is saying, but he has to temper it all with all the stuff that has said in
right.
the past.
Which basically means you stick with abortion.
Right, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the Capital Region because Bishop Hubbard is stepping down, he's retiring, and who are they going to bring in
right.
to be the bishop here?
Yeah.
And that impacts a lot of this region.
But as you know, I mean, now I'm going onto grounds where I know even less than usual. But as you know, the Vatican makes the decision as to allow whether to allow somebody to stay on longer.
Uh-huh.
It may well be a signal that this guy we like. I certainly do.
I think he's great.
He's been wonderful for this.
Yes,
yeah.
he's always been good. And he wasn't good in the 80s when Planned Parenthood and there was a big fight and he lost then. But, you know, whenever I've done anything in the gay community with religious organizations and asked for money, he's always given money. And he's a decent guy, but they already did the going away party, so
yeah,
I'm not
no,
sure
I think this, I think
do that.
Well, they did that for Jesus too, and it worked out well. He came back, and everything was fine.
But we don't really know. We don't really know what all the circumstances are, and who's ill and who's not, and all the rest of stuff.
You know, I was this is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I just have to tell the story. I was at church yesterday. And Father was on the altar, and he said it was the Epiphany, and there, and this was really the end of the Christmas season. The decorations of the church will be coming down next week, and he said that the children, the religious school, had made Christmas cards or birthday cards to Jesus, and they were in the crèche. And as you were leaving church, you should go look at them and see them. And he said they're works of art and they're very beautiful. And I said, oh, you know. So as I'm leaving church, I decide to go over and go see the crash. And I go over and the card right in the middle says, "Happy Birthday, Jesus," spelled J-A-Y -Z J-Z.
Oh boy,
us.
Wow. The highest compliment.
J-Z yeah. us.
Okay.
And I thought, wow, that is a work of art. Let us talk about that made my day.
Oh, good. Something needed to with the weather.
That's right.
What are we talking about now?
Sid Smithers reminds us about, I think this is interesting, about Benedict, of a prescient retirement. I think, you know, that also of you know, let us not forget of the circumstances.
Wait a second. Does that need any clarification? You mean, let us not forget about the
does.
Circumstances?
It certainly does.
Well, meaning the circumstances that he chose to retire, it was not a death or illness.
Right. Yeah, it's the first time in, what,
forever.
500
years.
Yeah. It's a long history.
Yeah. So yes. And so, obviously,
we still don't really
know.
I was
just going to say, what we don't know is what we
right.
don't know.
Right. Yeah. Let us quickly talk about job benefits in the last couple of minutes that we have. This is the Senate gets back to work today after a 2-week holiday break, just as Majority Leader Harry Reid promised. The first piece of legislation getting a vote will be a 3-month extension of the long-term unemployment benefits that ran out a week ago for 1.3 million jobless Americans. Is this going to
puts the House right where the House deserves to be. You got the Republican House, and they're going to say no. All these Americans who are either starving or their children are starving or who don't have this extra money, they are going to be responsible. So Harry Reid gets the issue. The Senate gets the issue. And if the Republicans in the House want to say no, it's on them.
Right. Let's not forget these people who are getting their food, their unemployment cut already had their food stamps cut by the sequester.
Right.
And so now they're even more behind the eight ball and more in a threat of ending up, you know, in our homeless shelters and putting even more of a strain on the state-based civil service, social services, and the nonprofits, and all the rest.
A week
of
is a long
group.
Time,
huh?
A week is a long time.
A week is a long time, especially in politics. It can be forever, but they've got to do something. They've
or
got,
it can be never.
Right. Or and if they don't do this, you know, they play into the hands of the Democrats in the 2014 elections. It's just that simple.
We love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Libby Post, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Joe.
And we'll be back tomorrow, and the roundtable continues after this short break.